Live from Los Angeles, it's the Light Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, writer and performer Frank Ingrassiata.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And musical guest Olivia Brownlee. I am Mark Lejeune, and now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I have had so many monologues running through my head ever since I knew that Frank was going to be our guest on the show. And I didn't know which one to pick until I went into the back of my closet and I said, oh, I think I want to wear this shirt. And then I knew exactly the monologue that I was going to share with you all. And it had nothing to do with any of the ones that I'd been thinking of. So here's what happened. It reminded me when I looked at the shirt of a story that I heard as a young man that keeps coming into my life in different ways. And the story was this. The story goes that a little girl asked her mother, while her mother was making meatloaf, why she cuts the edges of the meatloaf before she puts it in the pan. And the mother supposedly said something like, well, grandma used to do it that way, and it always came out delicious, so I do it that way too. So the story goes that the little girl one day asked grandma, grandma, why do you cut the edges off the meatloaf before you put it in the pan? And supposedly grandmother answered saying, well, my pan is so short, and I always make the meatloaf too long. So I cut off the edges, and that way the meatloaf fits in the pan. And so it wasn't the fact that they cut off the edges of the meatloaf that made the meatloaf so good. It was that grandma made a good meatloaf, but she cut off these edges, which was unnecessary if mom had a big enough pan, which evidently she did. She didn't need to cut off the edges, but she didn't think of that. She didn't think to ask. She didn't think. What she thought was, this is how we do things. And so what does this have to do with the shirt I chose to wear today? Well, I don't think I've actually ever worn this shirt today, this shirt ever. When I took out this shirt, I remembered this story. And the story goes like this, that when I bought this shirt, a friend of mine was with me, and he said, oh, you should give that shirt to me. And I said, why? And he said, because it doesn't fit you. And I said, I know, but it's going to fit me someday. And my friend said, we both know that shirt will never fit you. And this wasn't the first time this dear friend of mine said things like this to me. As a matter of fact, it wasn't the last time. He's still a dear friend, actually. I probably didn't notice that he said it. It probably didn't hurt as much as it would, one would think, because this is the way we did things. It didn't surprise me that I attracted a friend in my life that treated me the same way I was treated growing up in my family, in our extended family, et cetera, et cetera. And you know what? To some people, I was that guy. So I was having it done to me. I was doing it to others. This is how I grew up. And I never thought about, why are we cutting off the edges? Why are we treating each other this way? Is there a better way to talk to each other? And my grandmother might not have known a better way. My parents might not have known another way. They might have been busy trying to make life happen. But I have an opportunity to know a better way. So when my friend Jada Valenti said, oh, you got to have Frank on the show. Frank does this one-man show about Italian-American. And I thought, oh, I've seen so many. And they're all blaming their parents, or some of them, or a lot of them. And the Italians do it this way, and it's so bad. There's a lot of good that the Italians have brought. But what I saw, and then talking about it with Dorothy and Mark, what we saw in what Frank does is he's come to understand potentially why they cut off the edges, and that we don't have to do it that way. And that's how he shares it. We thought, we've never talked about family in this way, and so we can't wait to have Frank Ingrasciotta on the show with us to talk about family in that way, and our musical guest, Olivia Brownlee, all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sierra Campbell, and Alan Roderick Jones on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. You can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio, sitting here with Mark Leisure. And Mark, I should probably say, eventually I attracted beautiful people like you and Dorothy, who have talked to me in beautiful ways that have helped me grow. So things are changing. Life changes.
I appreciate that. Life changes. And your shirt's a little big.
Ah, ba-dum-bum. And I love that. Thank you.
And boy, you reminded me of many an Italian meal that I would get on the holidays. My mom didn't like cooking, but she would do an Italian meal for the holidays, and that the cutting off the ends certainly brought back many memories. So can't wait for tonight's guest.
Well, yes, actually, and just talking to Frank brought back so many memories, things I hadn't thought of in forever. Our guest is an actor. He's a 2-time winner of the United Solo Award, Best Comic Actor and Comedic Script. He's also a writer and performer of the critically acclaimed play Blood Type Ragu. As a matter of fact, the LA premiere of that play is happening right here in Los Angeles this Wednesday on Valentine's Day of 2018. He's also been an actor on TV and on films, and he has directed, and he's an educator. Let's hear it directly from him. Welcome, Frank Ingrasciotta, to the show.
We're laughing. Thank you, Filippo. Because Filippo knows how to say it the Italian way.
I surprised you.
See, when I go to Italy, nobody has a problem saying my name. Here, everyone does. Too many vowels.
You know who didn't have a problem saying your name is my mother.
Ah.
Who evidently is from the same town as
know,
your mother.
I know.
And your brother and your
yes,
father.
Yes, I know.
But we could get into all of that. But you
brothers from another mother.
Brothers from another mother. You laughed when I said, we don't have to cut off the edges.
Right.
So what did that bring up for you?
Well, it's just that you know, we in a culture we do things, and because there's tradition, and then sometimes we just do it because it's just part of what we do. And then one day you wake up and you kind of go like, why are we doing this? It's just sort of the pattern until somebody decides to break the pattern question the pattern.
Or yeah. At least question it. Right. Yeah. It's a good start. Well, it's interesting because I do certain things. Like if I want to be heard, I will get louder. In most Italian families, you're not heard.
Right.
Unless you're loud.
Right. Right. Well, loud is the middle name of the Italian family. So that's how it goes. And everybody's competing, you know, to be heard, because it really is all about, you know, I need to be heard. You know?
Well, so. I used to joke in an Italian household, it's like, if you want to be heard, use your outside voice.
Right. Exactly.
And so one of the things that you brought to mind, and then we'll start at the beginning in a moment here, but one of the things, like when I'm trying to get heard, I'll basically turn into a barker.
Right,
and you
right.
do that in your show, actually.
Right,
so tell people what a barker is.
Well, when I was a boy, I went to Sicily with my mother. I was 7 years old. And coming from Brooklyn, American culture, there's one way of living here. I was suddenly taken into this different world that I was looking at things. And we sort of went back. At that time, it was like in the late 60s, early 70s. We went back in time. So chickens were running through the streets. And the barker.
Were they crossing the road, too?
Crossing the road. And the barker would come around, and he would sell his wares at 5:30, wake me up out of a sound sleep and say things like, latte, frutta fresca, stuff like that. So that would be like the fresh fruit, and then there'd be the guy on the bicycle selling the fresh milk from the farm cows, and I was waking up, put it this way, there was no Pathmark or AMP or supermarket around the area. whatever your supermarket is.
That was the 7-Eleven.
Yeah, 7-Eleven. Right, that was it.
On wheels.
7-Eleven on wheels. So everybody was selling their wares, and that's the way. And then all the old grandmothers in black would run out in the middle of the street and, like, you know, get online, and they would be elbowing each other to be first online to get, you know, the fresh milk and the fresh, you know, whatever fruit that was, fish.
This is 2018. When you say online, it makes them people think that they're getting on the internet to buy things.
Physical queue. There was no queuing system.
Actually, what are you talking about? There's
right.
no queue.
And then the haggling. There was the haggling.
There was the haggling. You know, it's interesting. Let's level set this, because yes. you say you went to, it was a whole nother world. How much of a whole nother world was it when you grew up in an Italian neighborhood with Italian neighbors, where you went to the Italian church and the Italian store? I mean, how different was it when you went to Italy?
Well, because in Italy, what it was, an actual... See, when my parents came here, it was very interesting. They had to keep the traditions, but then adapt to an American culture, mm-hmm. which happens even today with immigrants that come to the country.
It wasn't easy.
It wasn't that. Easy. Yeah. So they were trying to find something that was in the middle. Mm-hmm. When my mother took me back to the hometown where she came from, she had already somewhat advanced out of it, you know. So to go back there, she acclimated instantly. But for me, it was such an impressionable thing, you know, to see... like 2 days after I got there, my grandfather passed away, and they laid out his body in the middle of a room, just all the traditions of what was going on at that time. You know, now when you go there, though, they're more advanced than we are. You know, and it's like they have no reason to come here because they have it together.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, a lot of them say, we've got America right here.
Right, we don't need it anymore. But that was back then, so it was a fast transition.
Well, take me back then, because growing up here in America, so your parents are trying to assimilate, and mm-hmm. and now as an adult, you come to look at that and say, that must have been really hard.
Right. Well, what happens to parents is that, for my parents, was that they left the culture. In those days when they left, they really cried their family for dead, because it was no, you know, faxing, no texting, no cell phones. It was just not even a telephone
right.
to call. It was letter writing.
And
that
it
was
took it. 30 days
yes,
to get
to
here on
here.
A boat.
And you never knew.
People died on
right.
the trips.
Right. My mother came here, and she didn't know when she was going to see her parents again. And she only saw them twice more after that, you know. So, but, you know, the family would come here. The parents would come here, and they wouldn't move with the culture that in Italy, and they sort of stayed still in the culture here. So even the way they spoke Italian, and mine was a Sicilian dialect, was frozen. So then when I would go back to Italy, you know, and speak these words, you know, my grandmother would say to me things like, that word, Adrina. We don't say that word anymore, which is a word for chicken.
I say Adrina. Are you kidding? They don't say that anymore?
They don't say it anymore. They say that word. Who taught you that word, you know?
Your grandmother would say this?
Right.
Because she had...
Right, because it was such an old way of saying certain
and
words.
And she's watching TV or listening
right,
to the radio,
right.
and they're not
so
using those
words.
So
for my parents, and for many parents, what happened is that they didn't move on with the culture here, and they didn't move on with the culture there. They sort of stayed frozen. Because in the neighborhood, everybody spoke Italian.
Like no man's land.
Yes. That's...
Well, in the neighborhood, it was probably all people that immigrated around
yes.
the same time. So that
right.
that culture is frozen.
Right.
It's like you're not Italian, you're not American,
right.
you're whatever this
right.
is.
And the butcher spoke Italian, the cleaners, the dry cleaners spoke Italian, all in the neighborhood. Now that's not so much. You know, but there were specific neighbors. You know, you had all your different kinds of neighborhoods, and mine was Italian. I used to have to get my father fresh Italian bread every day. I used to bike a mile to get it. It had to be at that store.
Barefoot in the rain and the sleet.
Well, not barefoot, but
did
but.
You sing to him upon your arrival when you returned with the bread?
No,
I got the bread.
No, but it was expected. And one day I thought I was being smart, and I went to another store because I was hanging out, you know, playing street games.
Oh, no, was
games.
It a Jewish store?
Yeah,
or
well,
Irish
no, it was another
store?
Italian
Forget
store, but
it.
As soon as my father came home, he looked at it and he goes, this tastes like, he goes, you know, the rear end of a porcupine, he said. I know this is not from Knickerbocker Bakery, you know.
And it didn't just not taste good.
Right.
It tasted like the rear end
right.
of a porcupine. How colorful can you get? And what I'm sure... I don't want to bring back bad memories for you, but I'm sure he wasn't like, oh, son, let's just go get another. No. Did you get yelled at or beat or scolded somehow?
He was.
Look at his face. I'm so sorry.
he was.
You brought it up.
he was from an old school.
Okay. Old school. Say no more.
Yeah.
Say no more.
Respect under duress.
We leave our heroes suspended.
No. He was a man of responsibility and a good provider, you know, but it wasn't the kind of, warm and fuzzy relationship in that sense.
Completely understand.
Yeah.
Good time for a commercial.
Yes. Quickly. We will be right back with more from our guest, Frank Ingrashota, and in a little bit live music here by Olivia Brownlee, all on the Life Changes show after this.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up. A second grader named Chandler said, I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life. And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, this is a great story. Bravo, Shadow. The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Dan Millman, The Green Children, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Frank Ingrashota. And if you're liking what you're hearing and you think you might want to see when he's performing in your town or want to invite him to come perform in your town, or if you're in L.A. this coming Wednesday night, go to bloodtyperagu.com. That's bloodtype. Ragu is RAGU.com. And the play is at the Whitefire Theater right here in Sherman Oaks, or near here in Sherman Oaks. Frank, we've called the show Family, Culture, Identity, Understanding, and Forgiveness, mm-hmm. which is so much of what your show, Blood Type Ragu, is all about. And one of the things about family that I think is funny, I was just talking with my family actually on the way here, and we were talking about this one person in particular, and all I had to say is one word, which was not the person's name,
right.
but just one word, and everybody knew what I was talking about. I was talking about.
Right.
So you resonated with that.
I did, yes. Because, you know, I never knew any of my parents, any of my neighbors' real names on the block because my mother had nicknamed everybody by their most outstanding feature or characteristic. So I thought that was their real name.
Or something they did once.
Once, yes. And it stuck with them their entire life.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Like what? So, give me examples.
Well, there was the Raging Spinster.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Because every night through her window, you'd hear her, you know, her say to her parents, I gave you my whole life, Mom and Dad. When are you going to die and leave me in peace? So my mother called her the Raging Spinster.
Oh, wow.
She never married, of course. And then there
How
was.
How could she?
Yeah. And then there was the Jew. The husband or wife, together or alone, they were called the Jew. That was our Jewish neighbors next door.
Wow. The one Jewish neighbor.
Yeah. Then there was the passionate dead woman. Because.
What?
Wow.
We say it in Italian.
La morte passione. So, because you never see her come out of our house, you'd only see her through the crack of her door, milky-skinned vampira kind of look, shaking out her dust rag. So only, you only saw the dust rag coming out of the door and a little bit of her face, and that's all you ever saw.
You didn't go trick-or-treating at her house.
No, no. So my mother called her the passionate dead woman.
Okay.
And then there was Mrs. Camarada with her legs spread open because she would always...
Mark, you do notice none of these are nice. Not one.
Because she would sit in front of her lawn statue of the Virgin Mary with her legs spread open. And my mother would say, you know, shame on you that the Madonna has to view that, you know. So
wow. You know, we should say, God rest her soul, your mother just passed.
Yes, she did. She did. She God rest her soul. Away like 3 weeks ago. I loved her today. You know what?
Nice old age.
94, yeah. You know what? We had a great ride together. If she loved you, she loved your innards. And if she didn't love you, she would make sure you knew that.
Well, there was something rare in your family, actually. Your mother loved your wife.
Yes, she did.
That's the only, doesn't always happen.
The only woman that I actually took home to introduce her to, because any girl that would come by, you know, the house to kind of ring the doorbell.
Your mother would have one. My mother word was always praise for her.
Yes. What do you want, my son? What do you want, my son?
What do you want, my son?
Which is the whole dynamic of the Italian son and Italian mom.
You know, I should say this coming up on Valentine's Day on Wednesday, that you just so happen to be performing in Los Angeles on Valentine's Day, but it happens to be the 25th
anniversary of my first date with my wife, Teresa.
First date with your wife, Teresa, who's here.
Yeah, she's here.
Ciao, Teresa. Yes, happy anniversary.
And that was, we had our first date. It's so funny, you know, I was ready to really let somebody into my life that I really wanted to connect with. And I had two tickets to a Broadway show. And one ticket was I bought. And one of the one I said, well, you know, if somebody winds up coming with me, that's fine. And if not, it'll be a friend. And, you know, I pursued her and I asked her out on a date. And she said yes. And then we started talking over dinner. And it's like we had parallel lives. And I knew... in the show, I say she was from the culture, but not of it. And she knew my story and loved me anyway.
Oh, wow.
So the thing is that she, you know, was I knew that she was somebody who was going to get my mother instantly and wrap her, you know, around her finger kind of thing. And charm her.
It worked. Do you remember the Broadway show that you bought tickets for?
It's okay. Five Guys Named Mo.
Five Guys Named Mo?
Yes, Five Guys Named Mo.
Okay.
It was a review of, and I can't remember the composer's name. But
it's okay. I think that's great, actually. All right. So speaking of shows, you've produced a lot of shows. You've been in a lot of shows, TV, film, and other people's stuff, and you've taught how to be an actor, and you've been an advocate, actually, for the visual arts and all of that.
Yes.
So acting in the curriculum and all that. So you've done all this. What made you want to say, I'm going to write something about my life and act it out?
Well, like I'm sitting here now, I always had these stories that I would tell to my friends. They were very colorful stories, quite animated. And my friends would laugh, and from any culture I was, you know, around.
Right. And that, I'm glad you said that, because that's so important. I love that we're sharing this about the Italian culture. But what we're sharing is not unique, not the immigrant story and not the assimilation story or the no man's land.
Right.
Every culture
family.
Has experienced this. Every country that... Okay.
Yeah. And I did it for a high school... an audience. When I was running off Broadway, a group came of high schoolers. And I had so many young Indian men coming up, and also
from India,
Mediterranean culture, Asian culture, saying happened for you when you were younger is happening to me now as a first-generation child.
Right.
And what that child goes through, struggling to try to understand who they are and their identity between two cultures, you know, and how they can find that balance. Yeah.
And so what aspects of all this comes out in the show?
Well, there's the pull of the, you know, my, and he has a part about, you know, life changes, overcoming obstacles kind of thing. I mean, my parents had a very volatile relationship, and but I would always kind of look at it as they were cartoon characters, like something from a Bugs Bunny cartoon. That was sort of my survival through it, you know.
With the rolling pin.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And because of that, I think what sometimes happens is the son takes the role of a husband sometimes before the age of, you know, of what they should be, because you take on that role sometimes if the mother and the father are not having a healthy relationship. So there's an aspect of that. There's the aspect of trying to understand myself as a man through the eyes of my father, you know, who was a very volatile man. And
as a man. Mother's pool,
yes,
actually.
Yes. So there's all those psychological dynamics going on. But please understand, it's done. Those are touched on, but it's all done through humor, and it's done in honoring the story and honoring the journey.
Well, you were able to overcome it, and it made you you. And I like to say that there are a lot of things that are in your childhood that are very beautiful,
right.
in your culture our culture that's
right.
very beautiful.
Well,
and being able to know which meat to cut and which not.
Yes. Well, what happened is I was going back. Friends kept saying, "We got these great stories. You should write them. You should create a show." And I wanted to, but I didn't want it just to be a funny night where everybody laughs and then leaves and forgets. I wanted it to be something that had depth. And life can be loopy. And when I got married, I married a Sicilian woman. I never thought I would ever marry within the culture I grew up in. I was sort of always trying to stay away from that. And but when I met Teresa, she so understood and got me and who I was. Her parents happened to live in Sicily, and the 6 months out of the year. So our honeymoon was there. So Teresa kept saying to me, "Do you want to look up relatives you haven't seen in years?" Because my parents didn't get along. What happened as a result is they kind of, out of the shame of it, isolated themselves from family. And so I was looking up aunts and uncles I hadn't seen in 29 years. When I last saw them, I was 7. I didn't know how they were going to accept me. And part of them was my father's side of the family. And what the miracle was is that in reconnecting with them, and whatever shame I was carrying melted away, and they helped me to understand who my parents were as children. That made me go, "Oh, I get it. I have such compassion now." Because I walked the streets they walked when they were 7. You know, so that's where the story after. And my father, I'm not going to tell you the ending of the story, but my uncle presents me with a gift at the end that was very touching, that connects me to my dad. And that's when I turned to Teresa and I said, "I know now I know what to write." And then I wrote the story. And the rest, you know, just sort of took off. And I've been doing it actually in different incarnations for it took me 9 years to get it off Broadway, and then I've been doing it 9 years on tour since. I've been doing it for 18 years.
Wow.
And it's still...
Has it changed a
yes,
little?
Yes, okay. A lot, yeah. Yeah, because I'm a different person every time I do it. But when it finally hit off Broadway, then that's the story that I tell. But, you know, I feel like I've done 20 shows, even though it's only been one show. Because I'm different to it every time, because I'm a different person at different moments with it. So as an artist, it's been an incredible learning experience. Yeah.
And the story is the same. You're not only a different person, but do you see something in the story that you didn't see or see it?
Yeah, because what happens is I'm living inside my father's persona. I play 22 characters, and it's just me on stage. And it's a play. It's not, you know... It's a play. It's a full-length play, but it's only me doing 22 people. So in living inside my father's persona and my mother's persona and my siblings' persona and teachers and neighbors, I totally understand and get why they were the way they were and who they were, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. So,
as we would say, God bless them.
Yes, God bless them. Because they have blessed me in many ways, because they've taught me so much, you know, some of it's don't let this happen to you, but some of it is also a real respect for a journey of life and understanding, you know, why people do what they do, you know. Yeah.
Wow. This is thank you for sharing. I can't wait to see the show. And if you're interested, it will be here in Los Angeles, but it's going to be elsewhere. So go to bloodtyperagu.com to learn more about the play and to learn more about Frank Ingraciata. I'm going to say it every which way I can. Enjoy, learn, love, grow. We'll be back with some final words by Frank. We're also going to have our Ask Dorothy segment with our very own producer, executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, in just a little bit. And then after that, live music here in the studio with Olivia Brownlee, all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes Show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Barbara Morrison, and Kyle Cease at our archive on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Frank Ingraciata.
Wow, you are on a roll.
That's the way everybody says it when they say it wrong.
And it's been so great to hear your story and commiserate and also to celebrate, actually, because there's so much beauty there. And you know, I was thinking how sometimes when I was on this thing of I blame my parents for this back when, I used to think, I used to have this consciousness, I developed this consciousness of, think about it, if you had kids right now, what would they be learning from you right now? And how would they grow up? And what would they think of you? So you didn't end up having kids.
No, we didn't. And that was a conscious choice. We thought about it initially, and then by the time we were sort of ready for it, we were just sort of going, okay, do we want, in later years, do we want to have a child that is an adolescent when we're, you know, ready for retirement age kind of thing.
And you thought about it. What was one of the reasons you didn't want to have a child?
Well, I wanted to work out my own inner child kind of issues along the way and integrate that. And but one of the way that ways, and that did happen, because, you know, I don't perform the show in a self-indulgent way. It's not for catharsis. I did my work, and it's really a pure piece of storytelling.
I felt that. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a pure piece of storytelling.
We felt it. Yeah.
But I get that out by working with young people and empowering them, you know, through the arts and the arts as a tool of learning about life skills.
So. And what are, as we close here, Frank, what are some of the franguzzo?
Franguzzo.
What are some of the, talk about, you know, throwing our guests off.
Anyway, go ahead.
But you're good rolling with it, I have to say. You're very good.
Tell
us some of what you do share with the young actors.
Well, I work as a resident stage director for a performing arts program in a high school. So I work with them, and I also bring the arts into the curriculum in for many grades. Like, I'll teach them, you know, the Civil War through drama and playwriting, which is great way, because it's experiential learning. Instead of reading it out of a textbook, I'm the fungi will come in and do programs like that. I also teach memoir writing to seniors, elder seniors, mature populations, having been through that journey myself. And that is work that really is so gratifying because I call them mature population. Elders have a story to tell, and a lot of times they get pushed to the wayside. So I try to give them a voice to tell that story, because when you have 80 years or 90 years of life experience, there's a story to tell there. So I try to channel, help them to work that out. And at the end, they do a little performance, and they wind up writing their own monologues. And the stories have been amazing, amazing stories that they never... Like where they say, I've lived on this earth for 80 years, I never shared that before, you know, and there's value in it because it's a community, it's empowerment, it's a wonderful thing.
Wow. Good for you.
Wow, yeah, good for you. Thank you so much. I wasn't expecting to ask you this, but just real quickly, do you ever stand on stage and actually see somebody that you're actually talking about, like not the real person, but that person embodied in that's so your aunt or so the neighbor.
Absolutely. Yeah. The real thing is when you're doing it, like my brother and sister are in the audience and you're doing it for them when they live the story.
Oh, the real
with
people.
You. Yeah.
Oh.
They live the story.
Oh,
with
really?
You. Yeah, and everybody has a different perspective of it because we're all born in different years. So my brother has one story. It's all the same story, but he has one point of view. My sister has another point of view.
Interesting point.
The youngest have another
Very
point
good
of,
point.
So you learn, that is a little, you know, interesting to...
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that in itself could be a whole other show. Frank, what a pleasure. So grateful for Giada Valenti for introducing us. And
thank you, Giada Valenti. You're
amazing. Blood Type Ragu, R-A-G-U, .com. And Frank Ingrasciotta, thank you so much.
Thank you, what a pleasure.
Thank you. And with that, we have a couple of shout-outs before we head over to our Ask Dorothy segment.
We do have a couple of shout-outs. We have a couple of previous guests in the studio.
Cool.
And Heather Murphy's on the West Coast promoting Zalise, the Pay It Forward company. Heather's with us. And Giada Valenti is in the studio, as you just mentioned. She's getting ready to debut a new single on February 23rd, Gracias Alameda, Thanks to Life. Check out GiadaValenti.com, GiadaValenti.com. Dorothy, my name is Martha from Los Angeles, and I just got off the phone with my agent and was told that I didn't get the part I auditioned for. I'm a singer and an actress, and I need to be creating. I have been struggling for over 20 years now, and I am so depressed because I always just make enough to get by and not enough to really live the lifestyle I feel I deserve. I can't stop crying over this latest rejection. Why is life so hard?
Dear Martha, after struggling for many years, I finally discovered that life is great once I chose to look for all of the good in it instead of focusing on the negative. Rejection is hard for all of us until we realize that the only person who can truly reject us is ourselves. After 20 years of struggle, it may be time for you to reinvent yourself. I was let go by a company in 1993, and I was devastated. I couldn't believe that they fired me because I was very good at making money for them. It took me way too long to get over the feeling of rejection until I began to see that what I was meant to be doing was completely different from the jobs I'd had for years. So I had to reinvent myself, and here I am now, happy and loving every minute of every day because I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Let's take a clear mental inventory of what brings you the most pleasure in life. You say you need to be creating, and I say create. If creating means to you that you must be on stage or in a movie, you may wish to look for other ways you can create between roles. It could bring you pleasure to visit people in hospitals and those in elder care facilities and sing to them. This would take the focus off you, and you would be giving something very necessary to them. There are so many lonely people in this world, and when we share our creative gifts freely with them, we are empowered to create even greater and happier days for ourselves.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if any of you listeners have a question for Dorothy, write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back with our musical guest segment, Olivia Brownlee, here on The Life Changes Show after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, LifeChangesNetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
And we're back, and we're still laughing. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Frank Ingrasciotta. And joining us in the studio is our musical guest. She is a singer, a songwriter. She's also a visual artist and an actor. She is Olivia Brownlee. Olivia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Filippo. And may I say, you look dashing in that shirt.
Very sweet. Thank you very much. You know, it's interesting because I shared that story, and yet you're in your music, you're sharing story after story, and in similar way, it has that effect. You walked in here saying, you know, that story had an effect on me. Your story has affected so many people through your songs. And so I know what you're going to sing, and that's why I'm saying that, because people are going to get to experience it.
Oh, good.
Well, speaking of stories, you are one of these people that had that are very unique and had the very unfortunate experience of having a magical childhood.
Yes.
Could you share that with us? And well, I feel your pain already.
Oh, I'm sure. I could go a lot of different directions with this, but since I'm the musical guest, I'll start there. My parents were both musicians, so I grew up very much in the fold of musicality, and it was a second language to me, if you will, perhaps a first. And my brother actually is the black sheep of the family. He came to my parents at age 16 or so and said, "Mom, Dad, I don't want to be a musician when I grow up." He said, "I want to make money." And my parents were like, "Son, it's okay. Please go and major in economics. Do what you will." So wow. He has a really interesting job that I always have to have him explain to me whenever I visit. And he works in augmented reality in Spokane, Washington.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
It is interesting, actually.
Truly.
But you mentioned music as a very happy thing in your life.
Yeah, it's very familial. It's very community-oriented. It's not something that we went to school and took lessons for. You know, I didn't know that schools like OSHA existed before. You know, I went to a normal school and just came home to music. I didn't even listen to the radio until I started riding the school bus at fourth grade, you know.
So. Because there was that much music in the home.
Yeah, everybody's a performer.
Right. How wonderful. And actually, what was your first instrument? Because you're holding one that I know wasn't.
Correct.
That incidentally is the very first time we've had a banjo in the studio for the Life Changes Show. So it was Brent Hahn who said, you know, this is the first time.
Yay.
That we have. So this is exciting. So you're holding a banjo.
I am.
So your first instrument was what, though?
Well, voice, and then probably piano was the next thing. My cousin would always play our piano when she came over, and she taught me everything she knew. And then I had to get a teacher.
Sweet.
Yeah, very sweet.
And then you've also got a guitar. I'm just curious what else you've added.
What do you need?
Yeah.
Just kidding. I don't do woodwinds or brass yet. But I just, you know, I like picking things up and making them make a sound. And
nice.
It seems to get, you know, get me a lot of attention, which is good for me because I'm a Sagittarius. You know, if there are other people in the house, I wake up and make a lot of noise. And so it's just fun. And it brings people together quickly. You know, if you put on canned music at a party, people are like, oh, yeah, whatever. But if you pick up a guitar, people are like, vroom. What's happening now?
Interesting.
You know, so
interesting, and we want to be part of it.
Exactly.
Speaking of being part of it, the first time we met, you were here with our friend Chris Murphy when he was releasing his CD.
Yes.
And you came to support him along with Greg McFall,
yes,
who also ended up being our musical guest on
yes
the show at another time. But as the show ended, and you had heard, I must have said something about being a singer on the show.
Oh,
or Chris might have said it. Chris said it.
Lavished us with explanations about you and your magicality.
Oh,
and
sweet.
Vocal.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. We couldn't wait.
Right. This segment's still about you, but thank you. You're so gracious. But then as the show ended, you're like, Filippo, sing. And you start playing an Italian song. You're like, sing this one. Do you know this one?
yum.
Okay. So before she gets carried away with more of that, let's hear a song.
All right.
What are we going to get to hear?
Well, I'm liking the family theme that we have going here. So I thought I'd share a song that I wrote very recently about passing my mother's hometown of Solvang. And I always have this compulsion to visit Solvang whenever I'm within 10 miles of it. And my poor GPS navigator is like, recalculating again. So this is a song called...
Which is what you're doing when you visit Solvang
exactly
every time. Like, I know, I am. I'm recalculating.
I learn something new about my family every time I visit my auntie. So
right?
What
is this called?
This is called Reroute.
Ah, nice. See, and I didn't even know that.
Oh.
Is this the one that you were doing during the rehearsal, during the soundcheck?
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to be so good.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, gosh, don't jinx it.
Here is, okay, this is going to be what it's going to be. Here's Olivia Brownlee performing Reroute live on the Life Changes show here at Studio NoHo.
Got my scarf all pretty. Okay.
My route to Los Osos took me right past Solvang. The smell of Los Padres gave way to the wine, and I'm driving up roads that my mom took on horseback. I'm about to lose all track of time. I'm about to lose all track of time. My mom and her siblings were ugly and feral. They were raised by the mud and the walnuts and streams, but the Lady Dame Gerda could tame them with goulash. Even I still go back in my dreams. Even I still go back in my dreams. And the closer I come to the San Ynez Valley, the closer I come to a world without end, confounding the maps of this itinerant poet who is shouting amen and amen and amen and rerouting again and again. My grandpa was born on the bleak Arctic tundra. Aunt Olive took India by storm and by pen. And I know I'm their blood and their pulse and impulses when I think what I've done and the places I've been. When I think of the places I've been. And the closer I come to the San Ynez Valley, the closer I come to a world without end, confounding the maps of this itinerant poet who is shouting amen and amen and amen and rerouting again and again. They say home is the heart, wear your home on your sleeve, and your home is the heart that you never can leave. And I burn with the fire of ancestral desire to always be right where I am. My grandmother died in that house on the hillside. Her ashes were flung on the vineyard below, and I never can get within 10 miles of Solvang without finding some reason to go. Without finding some reason to go. Without finding some reason to go.
Wow, Olivia Brownlee. Oh. Amazing. What did I tell you before the beginning of the show? That Mark likes to say that God is our co-producer. And or is it producer?
I like to say that too.
Or what do we say?
Producer.
Producer.
You can demote.
I demote God to co-producer.
If you want. Only.
Sorry, God. Anyway.
But
I was telling you this. I said, you know, for some reason, it's interesting because we've been wanting to get you on the show for a while. Mm-hmm. And then you thankfully suggested these other people, because what happened? You were in town. You lived in town. You lived in Los Angeles. And then you moved. Moved to Seattle or what?
I moved to Spokane on January 1st, and I came right back down for the production of Cabaret in La Mirada.
And here we are.
And here we are.
And so we scheduled this so the show would be over, Cabaret would be over, and then just before you left back out of town. Mm-hmm. And then Frank was going to be in town only this week, and I'm like, the two of these, and then you go and sing the song he was telling. But he was telling it about this little town in Sicily, and you were telling it about Solvang.
Peoples is peoples.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The common bond.
Mm-hmm.
So beautiful. Thank you so much. Well, if you want to be in touch with Olivia, do we not give the OliviaBrownlee.com at all?
Well, we can give the OliviaBrownlee.com.
Right? Okay, because I wasn't sure if we could give the OliviaBrownlee.com or not. But the one we really want to give is Patreon.com. /O Brownlee. Okay,
yeah, so just to make it confusing.
Yeah, okay, so Patreon is patreon.com mm-hmm. /O Brownlee, like the letter O, Brown, L-E-E.
Correct.
So actually, people vote on there. Tell us about sonography.
Oh, songography is what I have instead of discography as a musician. You know, we still release CDs and albums, but it's not how people consume music these
days. Nice, right.
People consume music singly. They'll go and they'll look up your album on iTunes, but they'll pick the 3 songs of the 10 that they like, and they'll download those. So I figure I'm just going to do them 1 song at a time once a month. I'll do it in a different studio each time to broaden my network, and because I review it each time on OliviaBrownlee.com, I can broaden everybody's network. And then people can just pick whichever singles they want and download those.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So that one's available.
So that one is not yet available.
Oh, cool.
I specifically played it so we could think about recording it next month.
Okay. Well, Reroute, that's another world premiere. That's awesome.
Exactly.
And you heard it here first. And what are we going to get to hear next?
Well, let's do a song that I recorded this month.
Okay.
How about that?
Is this also the one that I heard in rehearsal?
It is. Yeah.
Okay, because I like that one
okay,
too.
Okay, good, me too.
But I don't know the title.
It's called Pretty.
It's called Pretty.
Yeah.
Okay, well, just wait. Okay, I won't say
well,
anything.
Well, can I tell a quick story about this one?
Please.
No, I'll tell it afterwards. No, I'll tell it before, because it's important that we understand. I might actually recruit you guys. How do you feel about being a horn section really quick? Okay, good. We're in.
Sure.
All right. So
Mark actually plays horn or played.
Perfect. Perfect. Plays? I want to hear the embouchure, like a yeah. really good one.
And God is our
and God
our,
is our
musician.
No, God's on tuba.
He's our backup band.
So don't tell anybody. Shh. But I kidnapped the Kit Kat Orchestra one Saturday between shows and drove them 30 minutes south to Garden Grove to record this song under an hour. Live.
This is available.
This will be available tomorrow.
Oh, how cool is that?
It's very cool.
Okay, you heard it here first.
Okay.
Here's is that the story you were gonna tell?
Pretty much.
Okay. So here's Okay. So here's Olivia Brownlee performing Pretty live for the first time ever on the Life Changes show here at Studio NoHo.
Nope, that's the wrong key.
All the world loves a beautiful woman. Exquisite, and a smile is her sword. Ah, but any girl girls beguiling with some photogenic smiling, and a strangeness of proportion keeps your guests from getting bored. They say the comeliest of ladies are the gladdest, and I must say I am inclined to agree. 'Cause when you tell me I look pretty, I tell you I look pretty 'cause you're looking at me. And time, she ain't no healer, she's straight sadistic, she don't care what she does. We'll try to lie about her as we're caking on the powder, but it ain't in the complexion. Gorgeous is as gorgeous does. They say that handsomeness must shine from the inside, and I must say I am inclined to agree. But when you tell me I look pretty, I tell you I look pretty 'cause you're looking at me. Horns.
I was in the wrong key too. I think the one you started.
It was like six keys.
We're almost done with this instrumental break. Big finish. Well, if I had a nickel for every defect from my hair to my toes, I could afford to get a man a little class and understanding, since he who dares not grasp the thorn should never crave the rose. They say that beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and I must say I am inclined to agree. But when you tell me I look pretty, I tell you I look pretty 'cause you're looking at me. They say that blushing is a sign of the sentient, and I must say I am inclined to agree. 'Cause when you tell me I look pretty, I tell you I look pretty 'cause you're looking. Back up, girls, he's tooken, sinker, line, and hooking me.
All right. Olivia Brownlee, thank you so much. OliviaBrownlee.com.
When do we go on the road?
Yeah.
Well, that was great, you guys. Thank you so much.
I was going to say, I'm so glad that song's already recorded and being released tomorrow, and you're not using this version on the record.
And may I say, I'm really, really blessed to have been in that orchestra of Cabaret and been able to work with those girls.
Nice.
Because they are some of the most phenomenal musicians I've gotten to work with as yet. And it just happens that we're all women, which just feels special.
And I can't believe I didn't see it. But you come back in town, please let us know.
Okay.
I mean, if we can come see you, you know, post it and all that kind of good
lovely.
Stuff.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
Patreon.com, PATREON.com.
And that's a website where patrons and artists can get together, and patrons can give directly to the artist for the specific art that they make.
So I did not know.
It's
and so
really
you
lovely.
Find her directly at O, the letter O, that is, Brownlee, L-E-E. And she's also on SoundCloud and iTunes and wherever music is sold. What a pleasure. And actually, if you go to the lifechangesshow.com page where we have Olivia Brownlee, take a look at what she's doing with music as a second language. And that's something that would have been lovely to talk to you about. But there is more information available. And I look forward to probably, a book that you're writing?
Yes, that's why I'm going back to Spokane.
So you'll keep us up to date?
I'll keep you up to date.
Okay. And Frank, we'll get to see your show, and I look forward to it on Wednesday.
Thank you.
What a pleasure. May the party continue, actually. We'll you and I and your wife and there'll be more.
Pleasure was mine.
So with that, gosh, Let's start with thanking Brent Hahn here at Studio NoHo for making us all sound so great.
Thank you, Brent.
And for reminding us about Olivia Brownlee saying, hey, why haven't we had her on the show? Aww. So that was awesome. And then
thanks,
big thank you to BBS Radio Network, our program managers out there, Doug and Don.
And to God, our co-producer.
And to God, our co-producer, who makes all this possible. With that, on behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, and our producer, Mark Leger, I am your host, Filippo, reminding you that as your life changes like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.